안녕하세요.
Hey, that timing was really good.
Yeah, yeah. Here's to number 7.
Are we on episode 7?
Yes.
Is or
8?
7.
This is 7.
7, I guess. Seven. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Welcome to the pod. I'm Lois.
I'm Irene.
Hopefully our mics are working because we had a bit of a technical difficulty.
We had a little issue. We had a little thing.
But we're crossing our fingers. We're sending good mojo for this one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Today's snack spotlight is giving Korean convenience store vibes. Mm-hmm. I want to try to do an ASMR moment, but we have some drinks in these pouches.
Mm-hmm.
This is like super trendy if you're on TikTok, mm-hmm. if you're following the drinks come in these little pouches and mm-hmm. then you're supposed to put it in these ice cups.
Yes.
I know you don't like coffee and we're actually going to go get coffee after this.
Yes.
I got you a peach iced tea.
It's hopefully like she knows like me.
I got myself an Americano. So Yay. Maybe...
Shout out H-Mart.
If you put the mic on me, I'm going to open and do the ASMR moment. Should we try that?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's try this. So this is the big like... that wasn't as loud as I thought it would be.
The drink will be loud. The drink should do it.
Oh, it needs to make that gurgle sound.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared. Okay. Ready? I spilled a little bit.
We're hoping that did its thing and the ASMR did its thing.
Do yours too?
Yes, please. We're doing this on top of her white like coffee table.
I know.
So
I'm gonna get some napkins.
Risking it.
Okay, ready? Oh, it's a little bit more satisfying. This is a large. There's different sizes, but I couldn't. There was only one size cup, so I was like,
sure. She was like, she can drink more.
Okay, ready? Oh. Sorry for the silence. Ooh.
I feel like mine was good.
I'm scared to fill yours all the way to the top, so I'm just gonna.
I'll drink the rest.
Okay.
Cause today's a day, guys. Right. Today's a day.
We need to do the taste test.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, friend.
You
ooh, with a
he's away. Get napkin
complete first. With a little bendy straw. We like that. Okay. We're gonna try this sip together.
Oh, you're gonna sip it together.
Yeah, I'm waiting.
Why don't you do a taste test first?
All right.
Mine is all over the place.
I've been meaning to try this for a long time. Let's see. Mmm, very peachy. Refreshing and artificial. We love them. Would you like to try some?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
It's delicious, though.
Okay, try it.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, yours looks like... Oh, so artificial.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Dude,
we're not fake,
like,
but like we like the fake taste sometimes.
My straw doesn't even go into mine right now. It's funny. Oh my god, it's so flavored. It's like, it's so Korean.
Yeah.
I don't love it, but it's so Korean.
It's like artificial, but I can't stop drinking it.
Oh my gosh. Also, we have these. I don't know why it says okarto, but it's like in Korean, it's oganja.
Mm-hmm.
I got the spicy one for you, and we also got the cheddar one.
A potato snack. It's like she knows me, guys. I love spicy.
So we'll open this up real quick and do a quick ASMR if we can.
Why is
it opening
ripping?
It on the side? It's not opening in the middle. You got it? Nice.
Mm. Like trying to like do the ASMR, but also actually open the bag is a lot of work. It's multitasking.
Okay. Well, cheers.
I'm gonna finish this whole bag during this episode. I'm literally so hungry. Mm. We love it.
Yum.
Thank you.
Yay. That's our little snack spotlight for today. All right. What are we chatting about today, Reed?
You should tell me, Lois. You should tell me.
So today we're doing a tattoo tour plus grief.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of a more creative title.
The juxtaposition is just great.
I know. I just thought it would be fun because we both have tattoos. For those who don't know, Irene's is a little bit more hidden than mine. But I thought it'd be fun for us to do a little tattoo tour. Mm-hmm. But my tattoos inevitably lead to more of a story, mm-hmm. which is why I felt like I will get into more of where that came from. So we'll...
And guys, it's like crazy because this is a topic we touched on very lightly with her grief. So even I'll be learning stuff today. And will I be ready? We'll see.
TBH, I'm a little nervous. Actually, you know what? I'm going to just preface right now with a little content warning and trigger warning that we're going to start talking about grief and loss and caregiving and death and dying and illness and stuff of a loved one. So if that's not your cup of tea, like, seriously, don't worry about it. Like, pass on. Like, if this is too much, you can just turn it off and leave. That's totally fine.
And come back for the next episode.
Yeah, yeah. But wanted to preface that trigger warning. But yeah, let's do a little tattoo tour. Okay. What tattoos do you have?
All right, guys.
People don't know that you have tattoos.
And I kind of like that.
I know.
I like to be a mystery. Well, mine you can't really see at all unless I'm wearing a specific type of top or bikini or whatever. Mm. So one tattoo.
Or what's the first tattoo you got?
First tattoo I got was out of semi-rebellion because I always liked the idea of tattoos. And my parents were like not keen on it. But I'm like, you know what? I'm getting older now and I can make my own decisions. Still scared, but I did it anyway. And the first tattoo I have is a reference to God. It says to the King. And I wanted something to kind of remind myself of my journey because I grew up atheist. And actually, through our friendship and just through college, we kind of... I guess you kind of opened the door for me to like explore what it meant to be Christian or like be in that kind of circle because it's just something I wasn't exposed to but always kind of curious about because I had a grandma who was a very devout Christian and like she kind of raised me when I was younger. So yeah, like I think this tattoo is a reminder of like all the hardships that I went through and through all those things. I can still say God is good because, you know, I'll touch on a later episode, but like I've been through my own like hardships with life and just like the outlook that I have on life now, even with all that, like, yeah, it's just not through my own power and definitely through God. And like, obviously the people he's blessed me with in community and just like everything like that, like total 180. So like, just all glory to him. And I think my tattoo is just like a reminder of that, even when I'm like failing or like feeling like I'm like going down like a different path, like it always centers me back. So that was my first one.
What does it look like?
So it's like,
don't know,
it's like on my rib cage area on my right side. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't see it if I wore like a bikini top. Mm-hmm. And
like a right?
I want it to be a little different. Uh-huh. So this is a colored tattoo and there's like a little crescent shape of flowers that kind of trickle down. And then it's very fine, fine line script of To the King with a little cross at the end. Yes.
I and remember when you got that.
And spoiler, one family member still doesn't know. So, ooh, spicy. Okay. And then my other tattoo, I have another best friend who I met through college. And one day I was like, you know, they say when you get one, I was like one and done. But like you kind of get, I get the addiction because I have like 9 piercings and the same applies for tattoos. And one day I was like, dude, I really want a tattoo, but I don't know what. But then my friend, am I a bad influence? Because she was virgin with the tattoos. And, you know, I was just like, let's do it. And she did it. And we got matching heart tattoos.
Was she against tattoos before? And you like just like
super she, peer she was. Her? She was. And then like I got her on a good day. Oh, she's like, wow. You know, I kind of do want it, you know? And we just went. And the person who did our tattoo, she was an apprentice at a shop that I like. Mm. But she was like, she's still practicing, you know? And I was like, we're going to risk it, you know? Risk it for the biscuit. And it turned out good. So that one's on my lower backside. Not a tramp stamp. I want to clarify. Not a tramp stamp. It's just like near the lower back, okay? There's a distinction I want to clarify. Those are my only two. Other ones to come? Question mark, TBD? I don't know.
I was going to ask you, is there one you have off the top of your head that like, oh, there's one I want to really get in the future, or you just can't think of one right now?
Okay, you know what? If I didn't get this like heart, like matching tattoo and I had a different shape, I would have gotten the BTS heart tattoo that people get that is a subtle nod to BTS but isn't so like forward.
Yeah.
But because I already have a heart, like it was kind of like, you know, it's too much. And also if I didn't have flowers, I would have had like a floral kind of tat. But I feel like a lot of people do that. But then I was like, okay, I already have a flower, so I can't really do more flowers.
Okay.
Maybe I can, but I'm like, eh. But maybe if I start dating someone
matching tattoos
and we get married or something, you know, I'll do something.
Do you want your next tattoo to be visible or hidden, like all of your, like, do you want to keep having hidden tattoos, like the mystery? Or
no, I'll probably keep one exposed.
Okay.
But when my parents are a little bit older and they don't have the memory, you know, but I'll save it for my future husband or something.
Got it.
Yeah. But those are my two. But if you see me out in public, I have none. Let's remember that.
LOL.
That's my story. What about you?
Okay. I'll go in order of when I got my tattoos. So my first one is the one on my wrist.
Lovely.
Yeah. So this one says, and if not. So basically this comes from like a Bible passage, kind of like in Daniel. I don't know if you know, but like there's the three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who are about to get thrown into the fire because the king was like, you need to worship the idols. And they're like, nah. And they're like, we know that God's going to protect us. Mm-hmm. And they say, but if not, we will still like not bow down. Mm. Or, and it's like that, like, but if not, kind of like this, like idea of like this faith of like, God's going to save us. But even if not, like we still believe that he's powerful and good. But like that phrasing kind of changed. And like, I think this phrase, and if not, became like a famous phrase for people. Cause I did some research and I think like even in like some battles and like wars that were fought, like the soldiers would use this kind of phrasing, like if they, whether they believed in God or not, I think just people just get religious, you know, like when you're about to die. And it was like, I think this was a big phrase where they would be like, we're gonna go to battle with, you know, like God on our side, and he's gonna protect us. And if not, he is still good, like he is still God. Like that's kind of the meaning behind it. So I got this around the time that my mom was diagnosed with cancer. And it was kind of like one of those things where like, I was just like obviously struggling with that diagnosis.
Right.
And it was like, it's a world shattering thing. And so when I got this, I wanted to get it because it was like early on, I think, with her diagnosis. And I wanted to be, have like a moment of like, I have a feeling this is going to be a long journey for our family. This is going to be a long journey for me.
Right.
And like, I want this on me as a reminder that like, no matter where things go with this journey, that I can remind myself to like have this mentality. So that's why I got it. And then the second tattoo that I got is on my, is this my forearm?
Yeah.
So this says, Shiji, I'm going to butcher this. Shiji Margo Kidohara. So that's Korean for pray without ceasing. Basically me and my sisters, I have two sisters. We got, there's a verse that says, be thankful always, pray continually,
My brain is blanking. Be joyful always or something like that. I am so sorry.
Just paraphrasing.
Yeah, but it's like it's those three lines within a verse, and we divvied up those three lines and we got it tattooed on our forearms. And this is in the handwriting of my mom. Mm. And this was after her passing. So I got the pray continually one. And then my last tattoo is on my back. Have you seen it? You saw it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So my husband actually has the same tattoo. So ooh. I know he got a tattoo of my mom's birth flower.
Which is?
Again, my brain is blanking. I forgot what it's called. It's a fancy flower, but it's beautiful. I should look it up, but because her birthday is in July. So, but I really loved how it looked on his back. And I was like, I want the same thing. So I got the same, it's a little bit smaller. Uh-huh. Oh, it's a larkspur. My bad. Larkspur. So I wanted a larkspur too. So it's on my back. So
yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah. So I got that not too long ago.
Very sexy with a little dress moment. <I know. laughs>
Like a little shoulder back moment. I should have gotten it right here where Jamie Sullivan got her butterfly tattoo. Actually, no, Jamie got it on the same spot on her back.
She did.
Yeah.
She did.
Jamie, you inspired us. A
walk to remember moment.
So yeah, those are my tattoos.
Awesome. Well, I think this episode, I just want Lois to have like a little bit of spotlight because like she just mentioned, she experienced something very heavy. With a close family member, someone who birthed her, obviously. And like, that's such a big deal. And in preparation of this episode, I actually prepared some questions. So, and I've known Lois for a long time, like over a decade. And like, even when she was going through this process, she kept it very vague where it was processed. And we didn't really get to see like, the nitty gritty of like the difficulties. So I think this is like, it'll be cathartic and very therapeutic, I hope. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. And also I mentioned this to Irene before we even started filming, but I want to mention it again because I want the people to know like, why isn't Irene saying anything or whatever, like, but I want people to know
speechless.
That I'm giving Irene permission to, or I just wanted Irene to know that like, what we're going to talk about is really heavy and it's a lot. And the reason why I don't talk about this often is because it's like hard shit. So yeah. I told Irene, like, listen, you're not a therapist. You're not a grief counselor. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a reason why I went to therapy because I'm not just going to unload this on people all the time. And it's a lot. And I just told Irene, like, don't feel the need to say the right thing or feel like you need to have the right thing to say in response to everything. And honestly, I'm okay with the awkward silences after, and I'm okay with just moving on to the next question, and I'm okay with just you literally not knowing what to say, which is fine.
I may have stuff to say.
Yeah, and if you do, that's okay. But also like just wanting to like relieve you of that pressure.
For sure. If we both cry this episode, just cry with us, please.
We have a tissue box.
We have tissue boxes ready.
I wore my waterproof mascara. I wear waterproof mascara every day though, by the way. But
this is special.
We'll see how good the waterproof mascara is today.
Hopefully you use a good brand. Well, shout out that brand. If no marks on your face. Right? Yeah. If there are, then we'll keep it to ourselves.
Yeah.
All right, you ready?
Okay, all right.
Take a deep breath.
Yeah, here we go.
let's do a practice. Okay, all right.
Switch up the question a little bit, so that first totally one, I was just fine. Going through some of them, so.
Totally fine. Okay, so my first question is, for the people who don't know, just walk us through the day before, because actually we hung out, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm a little sad that it's so attached to like a hangout that we had, but how you felt that day and then knowing what you knew after the day after, how did you feel? What was the contrast? Because it was very stark, right?
Like, yeah. Actually, I feel like I should have prefaced a little story, backstory of like my mom's journey for people who don't know. So basically, my mom was diagnosed with cancer back when I was in college. This was when I was in UCI, so I wasn't
residing. When she left me.
Yeah, but it was more when I was at Irvine, my latter years of college. It was a kind of a rare form of cancer. It was, there's a long fancy name for it, but basically it was found in like her salivary glands. So that's kind of the diagnosis story. She found the cancer. They had to do surgery and then start radiation. Her cancer was so rare that there's like most people know about chemo, but there was no chemo that existed for that area yeah. or whatever. So they're like, we can do radiation. So that was kind of the route our family took. And then from there, like the doctors told us, like, this is a very slow moving cancer, slow spreading. So we kind of just lived with this as like the norm of like my mom having cancer and trying out different treatments, but mm-hmm. also assuming that it was a slow growing cancer mm-hmm. as what some doctors told us.
So would you say it was like their third year and like, was it a routine checkup that she was going for? Like, how did it just like spurt?
It was my third year, and I'm going to be completely honest. Like, my memories are really, really blurred and scattered, so I'm not even going to be able to answer very specific questions. But yeah, it was slow spreading from what I remember. And then at one point, they told us, like, I think, again, like, my memory is so terrible, but within a couple years or something, they told us that her cancer had metastasized. I don't even know if I'm saying that correctly, but basically spread, which means like you're immediately in like stage four or something like that. But that was kind of a big shock to us that it spread and that it's growing. But even then, I think the doctors are saying like, this is kind of a stagnant situation. Like the cells aren't growing super rapidly, whatever, whatever. I just know that we tried so many different things. Like we did try certain chemos, like not like the actual chemo, but like there's chemo pills for people who don't know. I know she did radiation. And then also I think she just looked into trials and like different like things out there.
Yeah.
Some doctors was like, oh, there's this trial coming, you know, like medical trials and stuff that you can like sign up for.
No, I didn't know.
So there's like medical, like things that aren't like completely out for the public yet, but you can sign up as a participant to be part of a medical trial. There was like all these different stuff. To be honest, my older sister was way more knowledgeable of like everything going on, because she was kind of the one who went with my mom to some of the doctor visits. So even I don't even fully know all the like different things that we tried. But yeah, so that's kind of the journey that we had.
It's just crazy because like your parents are like the led healthy lifestyle. So it's just like, I'm just like surprised at like how it could be like so sudden like that.
Yeah. And especially because it's my mom, like, and my mom was always a health freak. And so, yeah, it was a weird thing to be like, why is this happening to my mom of all people?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then basically, I guess I'll go into the question.
Yeah,
so she was just in this state of like, from the outside, it almost looked like my mom wasn't sick, you know, it's, except for the fact that like she was, her hair was graying and we weren't, she wasn't re-dyeing her hair at one point. But yeah, so that's kind of like where my mom was at. And
so you knew this going in the day before, like this was like, because like we actually hung out the day before and it was a good day, but like you knew about these like small things.
Yeah. Like, but never in my mind, like, I think because it's just like one of those things where they're like, it's so growing. It's not something I see visibly in my eyes that she's getting progressively worse or she's looks really sickly or she's getting chemo and balding. It wasn't like that. It was just something like we just tried different things, but my mom still on the outside looked really healthy. So I think the big shock is after this really happy day that we had, my mom had a stroke the next day. And that was the big shock. Is
how did that come about? Was it sudden? Like,
yeah, so it was very sudden. It was my mom and my dad were home on their own together. I think my sisters were out. I don't know. But basically, I just got a call or like a message from my dad that he's taking my mom to the emergency room. And I forgot if he told us right away that it was a stroke or it was like, he just said he's taking my mom to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And I was like really shook. And then I think my dad was trying to like level, manage how to deliver what to us. But I think he wanted to wait till he had answers. I don't even know, honestly. I think he didn't message us until later.
I'm glad they were together.
Yeah. And so he messaged us and said, mom had a stroke. She's in the emergency room. I'll give you guys more information as I know, or like as I find out. So yeah, like, I mean, literally it was kind of crazy because that day was kind of where everything changed, because I think I like navigated my mom's cancer diagnosis in a very numb way, because it just didn't feel like as dramatic as I expected. You know, people in the movies, you see, you have cancer, let's start chemo, and then boom, like you get sick and you start balding and all of this and that. Like none of it happened like that quickly. So in my mind, sometimes it was hard for me to even believe like that my mom had cancer. Sometimes I didn't even always like register, because, and also because I was in college, like I wasn't home all the time.
So you were like, busy.
Yeah, it was like, just something lingering in the back of my mind, and something we kind of navigated, knowing that my mom's like immune compromised and has cancer and this, but it was like she was still taking walks. She was still like a functioning human being. Mm-hmm. But it was when she had the stroke where everything kind of changed. And basically the stroke impacted her. It paralyzed, I think it was her left side of her body. Mm-hmm. And so she's in the hospital. She had a stroke. Thankfully, it didn't, like, she didn't die from that right away. But she was in the hospital, and she basically, her left side was paralyzed. And so now it's like we were figuring out, why did this happen? Mm-hmm. How severe is it? Like, what does this mean for our lives now? Mm-hmm. So kind of, I feel like that moment was where everything kind of changed, because everything kind of just started, like that journey of caregiving and like my mom becoming a different person.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the big contrast. And it's like, it's crazy. And I like always go through my camera roll, like just when I'm like looking for old pictures or I'm trying to upload something or whatever. And Levi likes to look through my pictures. And like that day that we had, we hung out, we went to
the beach. We got some donuts. Like, it was Oceanside, right?
Yeah, it was like Oceanside. And I think we went a little bit more south.
We went to a museum.
So spontaneous and so like, let's just like,
I forget why. We were just like, let's do it.
I think I wanted to hang out because I just finished my summer school. So I had like summer left. And I was like, dude, let's play hard.
Yeah,
like I have no responsibilities. Yeah, like literally no responsibilities. Yeah. Let's play. And like we had the freedom to play, and it was so spontaneous and so fun. So I have these pictures in my camera roll that day, and then boom, the next day was like,
you know what, I think looking back now, it's like what you went through is like an unfortunate thing, but like maybe God was like, I know this is coming, and I want to give her one joyous day at least before the hardship that she'll have to go through.
Yeah, that was a special day.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we're gonna go on. I may cry too. I feel tears. Okay. Okay. Tell the audience like what your relationship was like before she had the stroke, and like how did it evolve as you had to go to the hospital, be a caregiver, kind of change your lifestyle basically. Because it was different during that time.
Yeah.
You weren't as available. And
This is a hard one.
Which is why I wanted to ask.
I know. What was my relationship like prior to the stroke? So me and my mom had an interesting relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people know this, some people don't. I've always like loved my mom, and I've always had like, I feel like a decent relationship with her, but I never had like that best friend relationship with her as some daughters do with their moms.
Is that because you're a middle child?
For various reasons. I think just their personalities. I always felt like a very daddy's girl growing up, to be honest. I think because my dad is like a little bit better at English, and he's like a little bit better at like keeping up with pop culture in his own way. Like we're always able to like joke about stuff like that, or like he's able to connect with us in that way. But my mom, not as much. And so there was that. And I think also just like my mom is such a girl's girl, and like very like, my mom was always like very like princessy and very like, you know, kind of also like this very like keep up this like image as a woman. And I'm like the opposite of that. I'm really so girly, like, yeah. I, especially growing up, I was like such a tomboy and very, I was so like, and even to this day, I'm very like, I don't care what other people think. I'm just gonna like, whatever, you know? And my mom would always be like, no, like you're a lady, you have to, you know? And I'd be like, mom, like whatever. And so I think we were just really two different people. And I think also like, I don't know what it was, but I think a lot of times growing up too, my mom was sad that like, I didn't share all this gossip with her. Like I never felt the need, like if my friends share things, like they'd be like, don't tell anyone, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Like, cool, cool. I don't tell. You know what I mean? But I think some other girls run to their moms and tell them everything, which is fine. I don't judge you for that. I just never felt that need to go to my mom and tell her everything, especially if it's none of her business. You know what I mean? But I think that was a way of like, could have been a bonding thing for me and my mom that I didn't feel this need to like do. Because my mom would be like, how come like, these other moms are like, know about all the drama in your friend group and I don't. And I'd be like, okay, well, why did they, you know, like, I'd be like, what the heck? Well, you know, like, why are they all telling their moms? Like,
especially in that church dynamic.
It's like, we're all like the church ajumas, like everybody, whatever. So I think just like that and like my style and her style, like, you know, it was never, there was never any malice or any like horrifying thing that happened between us to make me like, hate my mother. It was just a lot of things like our personalities and things like that where it's just like I never, like some people are like, oh, my mom's my best friend, and I'm like, that's awesome. I don't necessarily feel that way, but I still love her and I still like adore her as my mom. So that was kind of our relationship. And after that, as I became a caregiver, it was a lot of interesting dynamics that I dealt with. It was hard and easy. And I dealt with a lot of tension with both because, number one, it felt easy in the sense that like, for some reason, like I felt really comfortable stepping into this role of caregiver. Because I don't know what it is. Maybe like just maybe my mom raised me well and I felt mature enough to do this. And I like felt ready to take on this role of like, oh, like she needs me to feed her. She needs me to do this and that. Like, yeah, absolutely. Like I felt no like ick from having to change her diaper or having to like, I think some people would feel weird about having to do that stuff for their parents. But for me, it was like, it was just like an immediate like, okay, this is what we need to do now. We're going to do it. And I think my sisters also felt the same like shift. But I think what was hard was that like, I think we always, we grow up like knowing that like our parents are going to get older. And that we're going to take care of them one day, right? I think what was hard was that, like, I knew that I would have to take care of my mom one day or that I would, like, be in this position of, like, we're going to take care of our parents one day. I just didn't think it would be this soon. I was just, like, I thought I would be doing this in my, like, 40s or 50s or even later, right? It was kind of, like, this feeling of like parsa, like already, like already I'm having to take care of my mom. She's too young. I'm too young. And I think also because like I struggle with this idea because I, you know, in college, we have talked about how like at one point my parents were like, you have to pay for your own car. You have to work and we can't really provide you allowance. I think like that also gave me this mentality shift of like, okay, you guys can't take care of me, then I'm on my own. Like I'm my own adult now. And I think it built like a little bit of this pride and this stubbornness in me of like, okay, like if you guys can't help me, that's fine. But now you guys also don't get to have a say or kind of like, I'm my own person now. You know what I mean? And so it almost felt more comfortable for me to step into this role of taking care of my mom than being taken care of her by her. Which made me sad.
yeah,
in a sense that I felt more comfortable,
yeah,
stepping into this role than being like cared for by her, because like it was almost like
you've been doing it, kind of
exactly.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the shift of.
Well, yeah. How would you say like your approach to it is different from your sister's? Because like I feel like you had this like, I think even like from like a third party lens, you do give off this like I can do it, like I'll do it, you know. And I feel like because you're like the second oldest, like, maybe you had to like be strong for like your youngest sister, you know. Because even from my family dynamic, that's something that my parents have instilled in my sister of like, when we're gone, like you are responsible, right? And I can imagine the pressure of that. And I'm over here like, la, 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 you know? But it's something that my sister has voiced to me too, of like, it's a lot of pressure. So like, did you feel that? And like, you're sharing the load because you have an older sister too, but like... you're like the middle, you know?
Yeah, it was interesting because, and I think I'll go into more of it later, but yeah, so when my mom was in the hospital, I was primarily the one going to the hospital, I think, because I had the availability. It was during summer. And so like I had the flexibility and the time to go. My sisters were also able to go, but I kind of was like, I have the time, like I'll be there.
Yeah.
So I was there pretty often. It wasn't until my mom was transferred to like hospice care and we brought her home and I started work that the roles changed a little bit more and my sisters started to help out a lot more. I think because my younger sister's so mature, I didn't feel this need to like, I don't know, like not protect her necessarily. And I think like I'll go into it a little bit more later, but like I saw how mature she was and how like, and I even almost felt bad because like I almost felt like she was stronger than me at certain points. Yeah. And like I was so grateful for them and what they were able to do in my absence because I had to go back to work. But yeah, I think obviously though, like it's not something we talk about in detail, like our own process of everything, but I can say we all process things very differently, even though we went through the same thing. So that's kind of what I can say on that.
Yeah. Do you want a tissue?
No, I'm good. Yeah,
I have a tissue, but yeah, just checking. Okay, let's keep it going. Do you feel lighter as you're expressing these things you've held?
Yes. Okay. And no.
I'm actually, all of these I'm really curious about, but this one specifically, what's something you learned about yourself and your mom that you didn't know before you had this hard journey?
I think more than like didn't know before, but just kind of, it just came out through this process. It was not necessarily like, oh, I didn't know this about her, but it was more of like, oh, I'm seeing different sides to her and myself now, because like I mentioned before, my mom has always been this like, very like, you know, like church cheeps and meme, like very like upkeep this image. Like,
you got to explain that like, to the people
church,
who don't
like,
yeah,
just like you have this position and title at a church, like a church leader. My mom was always like a church leader. And everyone who knew my mom will say this, like, she just, like, was this, like, kind of this princess. Like, very, like, she
put together,
like, always did her makeup so well, dressed so nicely, like, walked so elegantly, just this graceful human being.
And she did have that, like, you know, ballerinas where
literally.
Very like, straight.
Just.
Like, I think I'm slouching right
now.
Yeah,
I'm, like, the opposite. I'm always like, but, like, she was, like, the opposite, just this really graceful together person, especially in public, but even at home. And that's your brain, like you're turning that on, right? And I'm not saying she was being fake. I'm just saying she's mentally like, this is how I want to carry myself as a person. I think the stroke really changed that, because that happens in your brain. And I think what happened is that kind of filter went away of this like need to like be this elegant person, mm-hmm. because now she's this person in bed who has to be taken care of by her daughters, right? Mm-hmm. But also, like, it was still my mom. And I think other people who may have seen a loved one go through a stroke will say the same thing, that that person changes, right?
Depending it's like a on the, shell of themselves.
Depending on the severity of the brain. Like, sometimes, like, a stroke can do severe brain damage and just completely deplete a person and change who they are. Because it's really scary, I think, what happens with your brain, right? So for my mom, thankfully, it wasn't like she lost her speech or something intense like that. It just I felt like that filter and that wall of like, I'm this elegant, put together lady kind of went away. And I got to see like who my mom really was.
Can you give like an example?
This is like a really bittersweet thing because like, I don't, she just got more goofy. She just got more silly. Like, my mom was really funny during her stroke. And I know that sounds really weird to say, but me and my family always talk about, like, she would say the wildest things. And it wasn't, like, her being delusional necessarily. I felt like it was still my mom. It was still her. It was just, like, all this out the window of, like, I don't...
She was being more free.
It almost felt like she was this, like, different, like, freed person, but it was still her at her core, which is what was weird for me during that time, was this like, now I felt like I had the deepest moments of connection with my mom actually post stroke, like when I was caring for her and we were able to like now have this like banter, and like she can like, she would like make these jokes and like talk in this funny way that like I almost felt like I couldn't before with her.
It's crazy because like what you thought you were missing from your mom in your earlier like thought of your mom, like she had those, it was in her bones, but like maybe like she was finally able to let it out, but she was like putting on a layer of like, I have to be like the mom of the household, but like, you know, and like can't let it out as like freely, but like this let her just like be
childlike. I don't think almost. It's even like she chose that though. I think the stroke chose for
For sure.
Again, I don't know, it was just kind of like, I just feel like I had the most like deep, like raw moments with my mom during that season. But going back to like, what did I learn? I think, I know this like sounds weird, but I learned like how human my mom is and how human I am. I think we see our parents as kind of sometimes like, these people, you know, that can never be like destroyed or can never, you know, and especially my mom was such a strong woman of faith. And even through this process, she was such a strong woman of faith. Like when she was in the hospital, she would say things like, I'm not afraid. Like whatever happens, I'm not scared of anything. Like when she's like literally in her hospital bed after having a stroke, she would say things like, I'm not afraid. And she would worship and all of these things. But I also saw her fear, I think, because like the reality would hit her that she's ill, that she's not the same, and that her time is short.
Like in random moments or like?
It would be random moments. And these are moments I don't like to dig up because these are actually the moments I like to suppress. But there would be moments where my mom would just like literally tell me like, Lois, like pray for a miracle. I don't want to die. She's like, I don't want to die. And when she would say that to me, I think I saw the fear and was like, wow, she's still human.
Because,
you know, like for the most part, my mom would be like, I'm not afraid of death. I'm not afraid of anything. Like God's got this, like blah, blah, blah. But she had very human moments where she would tell me like, pray for a miracle. I want to live longer. And so that was like hard for me to see and experience.
Is this something your mom said just to you or like?
That's the thing. Sometimes she would catch me in moments where it was just me.
And
I think I talked to my sisters about it and they would say in moments that she would kind of bring that up to them as well. But it would just be very like random and like subtle. And she would just kind of be like, hey, please pray for me, like pray for a miracle. But yeah, I think I learned, yeah, just how human she is, and that she also had fear, and yeah. She also, yeah, you know, and I think for me too, like I said about my sisters being so mature, like I realized like how fearful I could be, and how I don't know. I want to say this because so many people will like be like, you're so strong. Like, you're so strong, Lois. Like, you guys are so strong. I'd be like, I'm actually not. Like, sometimes I had to like walk out. Like, sometimes like I would see my younger sister keep it together and I had to walk out. And I was like, oh my God, like my younger sister's keeping it together and I can't. Like, yeah, like I think that pressure of like being older, whatever, like honestly, that was out the window for me. I was just like, dude, I can't. Like, I'm going to walk out.
Yeah.
I tried when I could to be the stronger one and whatever. Yeah. But there were moments where a lot of the times I felt like, dang, like I felt like I'm not, like I can't keep it together as good as they can right now. Yeah. And like things like that. So
at least you had your sisters too.
Yeah. But that's kind of what I learned a lot of different things, but that's kind of the thing I wanted to touch on, I guess.
What is something, and I'm going off script a little bit, but knowing what you went through, what is something you would like tell someone in the future that's going through this for the first time? Like, how do you think you could be there for someone in a different way? Because you went through it so young, you know what I mean? Like, and the reason I ask that is because, like, I lost like a really close grandma, like, before I graduated, and I did mourn that for a long time. And I'm at this place now where sometimes I like it hits me only when I go to her gravesite, because we cremated my grandma out of her request, and I remember, like, when you're just, like, praying or whatever, like, the tears just come, but it's only at that time. And then just the rest of the time leading up to, like, that anniversary, like, I don't know what it is, but it's just, like, you know, I go about my day, but it's just, like, in that solitude of, like, you're spending those moments, like, the tears flow. But I guess for you, because it's, like, your mom, like, how do you think you could help someone in the future who's going through it for the first time?
Like losing their mom or going through the
close family member, their mom, or just like the expectation of like having to shift from daughter or son to like caregiver, and just like this, it's very sudden changes. Yeah. Like, what would you say?
Man, that's a hard one because, and I wish I had a more direct answer, but I feel like it's so case by case scenario, depending on their relationship with the person, how they deal with it. There's no guidebook and there's no like right way. There are wrong ways, but there's no also 100% right way.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it just like to sit with them and like let them grieve and let them be sad about it, because like,
and not to be like, it's okay. It's okay. I see.
And if anything, I'm just going to sit there with that person and be like, this sucks. I've gone through my own experience and it might not be similar to yours, but like, I'm just going to sit with you on that.
Yeah, because I feel like in society, like, you mean well when you say it's going to be okay, but yeah, maybe there's strength in also just being like, like, what you're going through, I can't 100% relate, but it does suck. And, like, until you get out of it, like, I wanted to sit with you.
Yeah.
Just being physically there with someone, you know?
I remember, or emotionally. I remember someone, when I was sharing with them what was going on with my mom, literally the only thing they said was, like, something along the lines of, like, that shit sucks, or something like that, or like literally, I'm not even lying, they literally said that, or something like that sucks ass. And then I literally, I'm not gonna lie, that was like the most comforting thing someone said to me in a really long time, when they just said like, that sucks. And I literally was like, it does. Thank you. Because I think like when I was in the throat, like when I was in the thick of it, a lot of people were trying to like say, I'm praying for you.
But people were.
Yeah. Yeah. But trying to say the like happy theme, right? I'm praying for you.
Yeah.
I'm here for you, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But that was just, I think, the first time someone just said, that sucks. Mm. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I felt so seen. Mm. And I always remember that. And I just feel like that's such a validating thing to hear.
Yeah.
When you're going through something that literally sucks. Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because like, yeah, you would think the positivity like would mend it more. But like,
it actually invalidates.
Yeah. I can see that.
And what you're going through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you're just like, yeah, that shit sucks.
Yeah. Now. I was like, yes. Yeah. Thank you.
That probably felt cathartic too.
Just like, I felt like a sigh of relief when they said that. Like, you said it exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, you know? So, yeah.
And guys, like, I just, for the ones viewing it on YouTube or whatever, I'm just, it's not that I don't want to touch those. It's just like, I don't know when to interject like this. So I'm just like,
she's gonna, tapping my knee.
Periodically just like, you know, tap her knee.
Thank you.
To have her feel seen, but like, in the knee. Okay. The next one we have, let's go into this, this one now that you're in. Would you say you're still a new mom? Would you classify?
I'm a first time mom.
First time mom? Yeah.
It's a weird, yeah, I don't know.
What's something you're grieving as a new mom that you didn't expect to now that you have your baby?
Mm.
I mean, toddler? Toddler.
Toddler. He's now a toddler. Yes. Yeah. Wow. You're just like throwing these.
Guys, I feel like I should have done investigative journalism or something. I love these questions that I came up with because I want her to just dig in there, you know? That's the only way you can just like let it go.
I feel very warm. Yes. Man, what is something I'm grieving that I didn't expect to? I mean, there are so many things. I feel like this itself can be like its own episode. Mm-hmm. I think postpartum was hard. I guess for more context of this story, I found out I was pregnant, I want to say a couple weeks before my mom passed. Mm. So I actually didn't get to tell my mom that I was pregnant.
Mm.
Which is also a very, very sad part of the story. Mm-hmm. We contemplated it. I was like, I want to kind of tell her, but also at one point though, it was too late. She was like, her consciousness was like fading, mm-hmm. and she kind of entered that stage of like where she's just sleeping, and we just knew like she was going to pass soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get to tell her. But yeah, so postpartum was really hard. Because I was grieving and dealing with postpartum. And if you're a mom and you know what postpartum's like, mm-hmm. add that on with the grief mm-hmm. of just losing your mom. Yeah. It was not fun.
Like times 100,000. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. But when I think of this question, I kind of actually think about something that that hit me this past year.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it hit me this past year. Like, it's something I've always known, but it really hit me mm-hmm. recently was I was – so this is – grief is a weird thing. This is what happens. Like, I'm literally at Irvine Spectrum.
Mm-hmm. It's a big mall complex.
Yeah, I went to the
Orange County area.
Outdoor mall, go to Irvine Spectrum with my son. It was just me and Levi, I think. Maybe it was during summer break or a weekend when mm-hmm. Ben was working. So just me and Levi
mm-hmm.
go to Urban Spectrum. He wants to go to Barnes and Nobles. I take him around and then doing the mom thing. And then I take him to Panda Express for lunch. Don't judge me. And then, I'm just doing the thing. I'm tired, but having fun. And then I get lunch for us. I'm doing the mom thing. I'm feeding Levi first.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like trying to keep him calm. He's like jumping on the chair, whatever. I'm like trying to mm-hmm. feed him and then trying to catch a break because it was really hot that day too.
Yeah.
And then finally I'm like, I need to eat. I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. So you sit down. Here's my phone. Watch a video while I eat. So I'm eating my lunch just like by myself because Levi's just watching a video. Excuse me. And then I see a mom walk in with her son, like a little boy who looks like a couple months younger than Levi,
mm-hmm.
and her mom. they walk in. I just see them like walk in, they're ordering food, and then the little boy again looks just a little bit younger than Levi, so he's running and everything, just a little bit smaller, and then he's like trying to like jump up onto the countertop while she's ordering. So the grandma, the mom, I'm assuming it was her mom, like grandma, whatever, takes the boy and kind of walks away and entertains him so that mom can order food in peace. And I just saw that and I just like had to like kind of shut my brain off, and like, cause it was very triggering for me, and took Levi home again. My brain is shut off, took driving home, bring Levi home, and it's Levi's nap time. And so I'm trying to put Levi down for a nap, but I just start sobbing. And I think like the thing that hit me the most, and it's like a feeling that I've had since day one of becoming a mom. But I think like what hit me is this feeling of like motherhood, like brings on like your maternal instincts, right? You give birth to this baby that you have to keep alive, and you're like your motherhood, whatever. Like now you like change into this person who is taking care of this person and raising this person. But I think what hit me was that like, not only do I have this energy and this capacity to take care of this human being, but I also have this new desire of like, I want to be taken care of by my mom. And just this idea of like, you know, like I'm this mom now, like I can take care of this baby and I can take care of this kid, but it's also the most like fucking hard thing I've ever had to do.
Or you want support.
That I just want someone to take care of me. Like, I want to have a moment where I can be like, I don't want to do this anymore. This is too hard. Can I be taken care of by my mom the way a baby's being taken care of? Like, can I just give up? Can I just stop? Can I just, for a moment, be dependent on my mom? And I think seeing that, like, really triggered that. It's like a feeling that I've had since day one, of like course. I said. But I think, like, me verbalizing it and conceptualizing it, like it really hit me that that's exactly what I felt of like, I want to be taken care of by my mom. And it's hard because I always see that, you know, like I always see these moms around me who like, oh, my mom's here to help. My mom's here to, you know, whatever, whatever.
And it's different. Like, I know you have your mother-in-law.
Exactly.
But I your mom is different.
I have my village. We have such a great community around us, and my in-laws have been like so great with raising Levi and helping us, but it's just like different, not the same. And so I think that's just the thing that I grieve all the time is like, and it's funny because I think of my relationship with my mom is it wouldn't have been perfect. It wouldn't have been like, oh, this is the best thing ever. I probably would have fought with my mom a lot. I'd be like, mom, no, you can't do this. You can't do that, whatever, whatever. But it's like, I could have fought with her. I could have still leaned on her though. And I think that just makes me sad that she's not here for that. And also that, and like her not seeing Levi grow up.
Yeah.
Also makes me really sad.
Yeah.
I think I always see like this hilarious toddler and this hilarious human being.
Yeah, he's pretty funny.
And it's like every time I see him do something hilarious, it also makes me sad because I'm like, you're so funny. Mom would have had a laugh
sharing those moments.
So I think that's something I grieve all the time, is like watching him grow and knowing that she's missing this, you know. And I know people like, there's, she's watching down from above. I'm like, okay, I get it, but you know, you want her here, you want her
like with the fighting and nagging included, you know, even though at the time before you're like, ugh, but now you think about those. Do you ever think, I'm gonna have to explain this one day?
I think that's something I think about all the time because he's so bright. Levi's so bright. And like, I always like ever since he was little. I mean, he's still little right now, but like ever since, I don't know, just when he started babbling, I started to realize like he's such a bright little human being. Mm-hmm. I was like, dang, he's gonna figure out really quickly and maybe ask that question really soon, like, how come when I go to this house with Ben's parents, I have harmony and harabaji, mm-hmm. mama, papa, but then when I go to this house, only harabaji, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like one day he's going to quickly put that together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I always like am fearful of the day I have to explain like that might be introducing him to death and dying. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know. That's
yeah,
a lot to think about. But yeah,
it's like for a different like time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll give you let's give her a second, guys. I feel like I'm grilling her. Her t-shirt has stains of tears. So
I picked a great day to wear a gray
shirt. We're gonna give her, let's give you a second to let's breathe. Let's do one of those. Let's do an exercise.
I make Levi do this. Let's go. Take a deep breath. And he's always like he's always trembling when he's angry.
Relatable. Yeah. Relatable. Okay. Let's keep it going.
Yeah.
You feel good? Mm-hmm. Okay. How do you handle all the thoughts that go into your head with, you know, because it's been a couple of years now since your mom's yeah. passed. So like every year you have to grieve certain mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. How did that change from your initial grief mm-hmm. when it first happened? Mm-hmm. And like, is there an evolution? Mm-hmm. Is there, sometimes there's regression. Mm-hmm. You know, what is that whole process like?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. Honestly, like the first year, I mean, I still feel like I'm in survival mode, but again, my mom passed in October. I'm pregnant. And then I think we just got thrown into like, I'm in my first trimester. We're going through the holidays.
Yeah.
It was just like a lot. But at one point it was just really me focusing on like, okay, how do I be a good pregnant person? Mm. But actually I went to therapy my first year and a half mm-hmm. after my mom passed. Because yeah, I think a lot of it in the beginning was just like the throes of postpartum plus grieving mm-hmm. were really, really tough. But I think I knew that postpartum would be hard. So I actually started therapy before that because I was like, I'm going to be a hot mess. Yeah. I need to like equip myself a little bit.
You if like knew that's yourself. Even
possible. Yeah. Yeah. But also because I was like, Ben is not a grief counselor and I don't want him mm-hmm. to have the burden of mm-hmm. like, he shouldn't have to know what to say. Mm-hmm. You know, this is like a really hard thing we're going through. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I need professional help. I can't mm-hmm. just like word vomit on Ben, and that's not mm-hmm. fair to him
yeah.
to like bear this pressure to like be that person there for me.
Although he will.
Yeah.
As much as you can. Yeah.
Like he was going through it too, you know? So mm-hmm. it's just kind of like, yeah, so I don't know. I think therapy was really helpful, but that kind of mm-hmm. was what shaped what my grief looked like in that season. Mm-hmm. A lot of tears shed. So I think it was a lot of confronting my grief in that mm-hmm. first year and a half mm-hmm. actively.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I had to stop therapy for financial reasons. Look, it's expensive, guys. But
oh, yeah.
I started my master's program. And I was like, listen, something's got to give. Mm. So,
oh, no.
I know.
You're like education.
I did feel like I was in a position where I was okay with yeah. pausing therapy. Not saying I was healed, whatever. Yeah. But I felt like it's okay to pause it right now. But I think, I don't know. I think within the last year or two, it's been a little bit more of – honestly, like repressing, suppressing, what's the right word?
Suppressing.
I do that a lot. And I think this past year, like I haven't cried a lot as much, but I think because I'm suppressing a lot of my feelings.
Why?
Because it's so hard. I think when that year where I was doing therapy and I was crying a lot, like, it always feels good after a good cry.
It does.
But it's so hard to get there. I know this sounds weird, but I said this to my therapist too. I was like, it feels like going to the gym.
Mm.
Like it's like, and confronting your grief feels like a workout and like working a muscle, right? Because it's like, I hate to go there, mm-hmm. but everyone after coming out of the gym feels good to an extent. I'm pretty sure most of us, some people maybe not, but like, I feel like most of us after a good workout feel good, right? Mm-hmm. But it's getting yourself there. That's the hardest thing. And doing the workout itself is the hardest thing. And I know it's like really weird to equate that to grief, but like, that's sometimes how I feel is like, I know that after a good cry or kind of like talking it out will be like helpful, but to get there is so hard and exhausting. And I think also because knowing that after a good cry and whatever, it doesn't mean I'm going to be healed.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't mean it's like the magic solution. Like I cried it out. I'm healed. I'm better. Like sometimes that works for certain situations, but not for this. And so it's like very, very exhausting to like do that constantly, to like confront these painful memories and these painful moments, and then like work, do the work, you know, anyone who's been in therapy knows like, you have to do the work, and that's, it's so hard and exhausting. And so sometimes it's easier to just like flip, like, I don't want to think about it. I'm just going to veg out. I just want to like, you know,
Netflix,
think happy thoughts, think Netflix happy thoughts, chill. Just like, you know, but I think that leads to a lot of unhealthy habits, at least for me.
I was going to mention that.
Yeah, like the doom scrolling. Some people are just doom scrolling. I'm doom scrolling for a reason.
Oh, I'm just doom scrolling.
A lot of, it's gotten better. Not the doom scrolling, but the reason why I'm doom scrolling has gotten better. In the beginning, it was pretty bad because if I left alone to my thoughts, my mind would spiral to like these traumatic moments. But yeah, I don't know. That's kind of,
so I know you logically know that suppressing is not good, right? Cause they always have to air it out, even if it's the hard work. So like, but it's like how you're coping right now. So like, how do you think you'll handle those suppressed emotions in the future? Like, what are you hoping for?
I don't know.
It's okay not to know too.
Honestly, like I tell myself all the time, this is not good. Like this is not healthy. Like I should probably go back to therapy. But like, you know, just sometimes you just want to be stuck. Like you have a stubbornness of like, sorry, this is easier. Like don't tell me what to do right now. And I think Ben maybe struggles with that sometimes. Be like, hey, maybe you should sleep a little earlier. Maybe I don't feel like it. I'm depressed. Like, I'm grieving.
Let me watch my culinary wars.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think there's a stubbornness and there's like a, I don't feel like it. I don't want to.
That's fine.
And I think there's a grace, you know, of like, it's okay to like feel stuck. It's okay to just want to rot and just not and be numb because it's so much easier to like be numb sometimes. Yeah. I know it sounds awful, but.
I think you need a mix of everything like to keep balanced, you know, because you can't always be ready for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I kind of want to go into something you mentioned a little bit earlier. You said you had a village, you know, a community. How has your relationships outside of family kind of evolved from, you know, because we kind of touched on it earlier, a little bit about like, you know, when you were a caregiver, the dynamics were a little bit different. You had to adjust a lot of your lifestyle. And like, so what's your view on community now and like, and or relationships? And yeah, if you can go into that a little bit.
Yeah, man, I think I was really grateful for my community during the season, especially right after my mom passed, of just, and even during the caregiving process of how my friends, including you, showed up. I think not all of us experienced that. And I know for some people who go through something hard, you really figure out who's there for you and who's not. And you're surprised by who shows up and who doesn't. And for the most part, I can say that like my girls, who I consider my girls,
Girl Squad.
I was really grateful for you guys. And I don't feel like necessarily I lost any friendships or was like disappointed by anybody or whatever. There were people, I'm not going to name names and I'm not going to specify.
Tea?
Just in general, there were people that I was surprised by who didn't say anything or said wrong things during that season. So yeah, I think it's just such an interesting thing to deal with. It's like not only are you dealing with this really hard thing, but then like it's almost like this drama of relationships that come into play too. Like, damn, like why isn't this friend showing up for me? Why is this person
when you needed it most?
Yeah. And so it's like so many layers of things that you're navigating and dealing with that was probably interesting complex. For all of us.
How has it changed the dynamic with your sisters? Your kin?
I think I am so grateful for my sisters and I'm so grateful for my family. And my respect for them has just like skyrocketed. I think, especially because, so for context, when my mom was home and we were having her at home for hospice care and I forgot what was the other word, palliative care, but she was home for a while. We brought her home from the hospital to care of her there with the hospital bed and everything. We had nurses come and go, but most of the time we became primary caregivers. But in the fall, I went back to work. And the situation was my older sister, I think, was in school-ish and intern stuff, but a lot of it was remote. So she had the flexibility to help out. And my younger sister too, I think, was kind of in school, pausing school. She was in a situation too where she didn't have to go to work every day. So they were there to help every day. So at one point it was just like an agreed upon thing where they were like, you don't have to quit work or like you have a full-time job you need to get back to. We can hold the fort down here. You need to go back to work. We don't know how long this situation is going to be. If it was like you have 1 month left with your mom, then it was like I would have like dipped. But it was like we didn't know how long the situation was going to be like this. And so it was kind of like it just made sense that I go back to work. And so I felt a lot of guilt during that time, but I also felt so much gratitude for my sisters and what they were able to do. And just like the camaraderie our family had during that time to show up for each other and for my mom.
I feel like you might as well have gotten closer.
Yeah, I think like at the end of the day, like I am so proud of our family and what we were able to do for my mom. And I feel like we really gave her the best care we possibly could. It wasn't perfect. There was a lot of long nights that I didn't see myself for my sisters, but I'm so proud of them. And I was so proud of our family and how we were able to like
come together.
Yeah. And I feel like give my mom the most like dignified care that she could receive. So yeah, my sisters, if you are listening to this,
shout out! Woo!
They're
not the aunt. Well, you're not an aunt anymore.
I feel like we still feel like the aunt girls, sisters.
Before we go into the next question, as you're talking, I'm like curious about this. What did this process teach you about our healthcare system?
Oh, girl, yeah. Honestly, I am so grateful for hospice care and hospice care workers. I think there's a lot of bad things I can say about the healthcare system. And honestly, my brain can't even rack that up right now. But I was just really grateful that when my mom transitioned to hospice care, the level of care that we got, the care that these people had for our mom and for our family was so, so like these people go into hospice care because they know what it's like. I think a lot of people in hospice like know what it's like to see your loved one die, to know what it's like to care for someone in this stage. And I was so, so grateful for like the nurses and even the social workers who came. And like even the physical therapists and like we had some friend of a friend who was like an acupuncturist who came who cared for my mom and like did some stuff with my mom. Mm. And he like would pray over her and massage her and whatever. Mm. And I was like so grateful for those people who showed up and like really care for like my mom. And like some of those people I still see, and like I see them and it's just an immediate like, thank you so much. Mm. Like, I'm so thankful for you. Mm. Some of them I'll never see them again. But yeah, I think.
You had like another village.
Yeah.
Like in the medical space.
Yeah. But unfortunately it was the end stage. Mm. So it was short and temporary. But yeah, I mean, I could go into like our time at the hospital and our stuff like that, but I don't even want to go there. Mm. But yeah, I think I just want to shed light on that. Mm. I think honestly. Yeah.
I feel like a tap was needed there. All right, let's kind of go into this question because you mentioned it earlier, your end if not tattoo, which you said implies he is good, right? He's still good. So what is your relationship with church, God? Because you grew up Christian, polar opposite of me, and I know you mentioned like Don't Come to Go. It was like part of your DNA, you know, like you were born into it almost. So like, how has that kind of evolved too?
Yeah. Man, that's like one of the biggest things I think after my mom passed and even before, like, so a lot of that journey was post COVID. So, a lot of churches were still online, kind of ish, things like that. And so we were in a really weird place, me and Ben, with church. Mm-hmm. We kind of had left our home church already, had been plugged into a church, kind of ish, not fully, because like COVID and my mom, and I'm caregiving on the weekend, so I can't even go. So yeah, it was just like a really weird thing. And I think the way that this really impacted me is like, I didn't want to go to church sometimes because it's like, I don't even know where to start to begin explaining what's going on at home to these people. And then on top of that, I didn't want to go to a community and go to a space where I'm going to, if I do share what's happening, people, I didn't want to hear the Christian band-aid like crap of like, oh, God's got this. He has a plan for everything, blah, blah, blah. Like, I feel like people have gotten better. And I think some people are aware enough to not say stuff like that, but you'd be surprised at how many people still say stuff like that. And so I just didn't want to even risk being in a space where like, I just hearing crap that I don't want to hear. And so that really affected my church journey and like my like participation in a church community, but also it affected my relationship with God a lot. I feel like people who know me like, oh, Lois is a solid believer, went to church her whole life, was in leadership, did discipleship training, did all the programs, served
missions,
all whatever, whatever, like I checked off all the boxes of like great Christian, whatever. This really messed me up, as it would anybody, I think. And I think I had to wrestle, and I still to this day wrestle a lot with like my anger with God. And I don't know how to explain it better than in a Korean word. Like, it's like this feeling of like, I was so bijasa with him, like pissed off of this, like the stubborn of like, oh, like, or have you read your Bible lately? Have you? And it was this feeling of like, I don't want to. Like you know, like a little kid, like a little kid, like, I don't want to do that right now. I'm pissed at you. Like very like petty attitude of like, well, you didn't do this for me, so I'm not going to talk to you. It was like that very strong like attitude that I carried of like.
Rightfully, because you loved her so much.
Yeah.
And or love her so much. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I struggled with for a really long time of like being really angry with God and being very like upset and disappointed and like worship was really hard for me, going to churches.
Yeah.
Going to church was really hard. It was like very triggering to be in a worship setting.
Mm-hmm.
If I hear Waymaker, I'm like, like my mom saying Waymaker all the time. Where was the way? Like, yeah, what happened?
Yeah.
Like God is good. He's miracle worker or yeah, whatever. Yeah, I'm yeah, like, yeah. Where, what happened? You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So church was really hard and mm-hmm. God and the Christian thing was really hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I think time heals a little bit, not mm-hmm. fully, mm-hmm. but I think even now when people ask me like, oh, you know, like, why does bad things happen to good people? I don't have the answers. I don't literally.
I think I asked you that in college. Yeah,
all the yeah. time, right? And especially now with like having lost my mom, I have even more questions than answers. But I think I've gotten to a place where, and I've always felt this in my heart, like even after all this crap and after all this, like, you know, trauma and whatever, like I still in my heart feel like I can say he is good.
Mm.
And I don't know why I'm able to say that, to be honest.
Mm.
I can fall on so much anger and fall on so much like,
mm.
God, why did you?
Blah, yeah, blah. Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's, I guess that's faith. And I guess that's also just knowing that like he is grieving with us.
Mm.
And I hate the whole, she's in a better place now. You know, she's no longer hurting. I hate that. But at the end of the day, it's like, I do know, you know, yeah. she's whole
mm.
and she's in heaven and she's with him. And yeah, I don't know. I don't want to make this like a, oh, perfect ending, happy ending.
Yeah.
Because it's not.
It's never linear. It's like, yeah. You know.
But I think I'm just grateful. I feel like God's constantly pursued and pulled mm. and like I'm thankful that I didn't fall astray and totally gave up on God and totally yeah. gave up on church and totally gave up on faith.
And if that was the path, then you would have had grace for that too.
Yeah,
because it's tough. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's
because, you know, they say like, you know, love God's people and, you know, like your love for God is supposed to be like the Almighty, right? Mm-hmm. But like we're human and like mm-hmm. for the family that birthed us or like who we have a connection with, it's a soft spot.
Mm-hmm.
First off, I just want to say like thank you for sharing. I know it's not easy. Mm-hmm. It's things you've avoided a little bit, but I'm glad we could have like this forum where, you know, our mission with this is like for us to be honest full-heartedly in any aspect. And so when Lewis was like willing to talk about this, I was like, yeah, sure. But like, it's not something I wanted to like, you know, yeah, because it's her yeah. personal journey. Mm-hmm. Before we wrap up, that was actually my last question, but I have a couple more actually. So my next question is, what does joy look like for you today?
Mm. Oh man, you know, there's so much joy still as a grieving person. And I think this is such a cliche statement, and I feel like, but it's like something you really experience is where like joy and grief exist, like coexist.
Yeah.
And it's just like such a weird thing to paint, but it's just the reality. And like I said earlier, like Levi, literally, it's when the joy is the greatest is when I also feel the grief as the greatest, because it's like these moments of like, or I literally see Levi being so, so silly and it's like so funny and it's so joyful. It also brings up the deep sadness of like, I wish my mom could see this.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, just like when our family gets together now and we get to see our Levi and his cousin Caleb, like the grandkids, like playing together now. And it's so joyful. It's so special. But it's like you can also feel the absence of like, we wish she was here. Right. Yeah. So there's so much joy because, you know, we carry on, we live our lives, and, you know, like,
and she want, we, I feel like she would want you guys,
yeah,
to.
We live our lives to the fullest as much as we can to honor her memory. But inevitably that comes with like all the things that she's missed out on, and all the all the things we wish she could see. So yeah, that's kind of,
it's good.
Yeah,
it's good. Yeah, I feel like it's a hard concept to say joy and grief go together, but it you know,
it makes sense almost.
Not like what's the word, compartmentalizing? It's not that, but it's just like a tug of war of like wrestling with. My final question for you, big picture wise, is how do you think you'll continue to honor your mom?
I think fighting for the faith that she had. I think the thing that I struggled the most with as a pregnant woman and preparing for a motherhood was this idea that, like, I thought, I always had this picture of myself as a pregnant person or as a mom, because I had my mom's model of, like, she would always tell us, like, when I was pregnant with you guys, I would always sing these worship songs while you were in my belly, and I'd read the Bible every day and I'd pray every day. And I always, like, would hear these stories and think that I'd be this mom of, like, I'm going to be that mom too. Like, I want to follow her lead, and I want to sing over my belly and sing and pray and be that person. And it's like, unfortunately, when I became pregnant, I lost my mom and I literally couldn't do those things that I thought I would. And I wrestled with that so much of, like, I'm not that person that I thought I would be. And I grieved for the baby in my belly at the time, that he wouldn't have that, like, model and that, like, I don't know, like, blessing. And I know it's not like he's cursed, whatever, but I just grieved for him in my womb. But I think, knowing, again, grief is not linear, knowing that this journey is not linear, but I think, and I don't see myself as, like, there's like a finish line necessarily. Like, I'm gonna get to this point one day. I'm gonna be this woman of God one day, whatever. But, like, I want to fight for my relationship with God and my faith for God and God alone. I feel like that should be the sole, like, intent. But I think there's also this, like, writing, like, intent of, like, I also want to make my mom proud, and I also want to model after the faith that she left behind and the legacy that she left behind. So I think that is a good motivator, you know, because even right now it's like, sometimes I'm like, I don't want to work on my I don't want to open my Bible,
of course,
you know. And sometimes you need a, like, outside push, and whether it's like someone else is, like, well, pushing you, and for me, if it's, you know, the legacy of my mom that's pushing me, I don't think that's a bad thing. And so, yeah, I think trying to fight to be in that place one day, and be a woman of faith like she was.
I think, you know, I can't say for sure, but I think I could say, like, I feel like anyone who's gone through a journey like this could easily give up, right? Like, because that's kind of, like, the thing to do, because this is the hardest shit ever. But the fact that you even made it this far, you know, raising a healthy baby, processing in your own way, like, and your mom knows it's hard. I'm sure she's, you know, looking down and so proud, because, you know, I know you said you don't like these positive whatevers, but, okay, like,
bring it.
I think, like when I look at your family and, like, your sister Sue, it's like, you guys went through something hard, but I feel like your mom, like, raised you guys in a way where, like, your armor was there. Like, you had things, you know, like, the armor is never perfect. Like, you know, you're going to have your moments, but you still, like, held your ground, like 중심 in Korean, mm-hmm. and like finding the joys, mm-hmm. you know, with Levi, with your husband, mm-hmm. and even with your dad, mm-hmm. like, you know, like, I'm sure he's going through his own things, but like, I think living on mm-hmm. is important, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to remain there, because mm-hmm. I think your mom would grieve that too, mm-hmm. like, feel that guilt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's a slow process, but I feel like you're doing it. And mm-hmm. even if it's like minuscule steps, mm-hmm. like the fact that you're doing it every day and choosing that and choosing to, you know, read the Bible, find a new church, all these things, they're all for healing. And I think like your mom would be happy with that, you know? And so just want to send that encouragement. Mm-hmm. And yes, the last tap of the episode, we'll talk after this episode, but I don't know what else to do in this couch. Awkwardly. Just
like, I don't think you ever touched my knee like that.
Yeah, before. I'm just like,
no. Oh man.
Well, thank you for sharing and being so vulnerable.
We need a cheers like we always do. Cheers to life.
Cheers living, to life.
Loving.
Yes. Loving. Vulnerability.
Amen. And wet tissues and tears.
Thank you. Kleenex, not sponsored.
Yes. This
not
is
sponsored.
The lotion.
But...
you gotta get the lotion brand.
Lotion brand. Thank you guys for watching.
Thank you, everybody.
Till next time. Bye.